This is episode 327 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, he's back in his cabin, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
My cabin out in the woods, away from mainstream media and all the outrage. But yeah, I'm still outraged today, Brandon. Justin Britt, what a traitor. I can't believe he ended up on the Texans. I'm upset, and I'm sure that's what's on the top of everybody's mind going into this week regarding Seahawks football, is Justin Britt not being signed or re-signed by the Seahawks, and it's a bummer.
It's pretty much dominating everybody's feed on Twitter is how much of a turncoat Justin Britt is, and just the disappointment that he's not going to be back in Seattle when he comes back into the NFL after being out for a year.
Oh, yeah. It's all his fault for taking that offer with the Texans when it sounds like he may not even have gotten an offer from the Seahawks. He should have demanded an offer from John Schneider. It's his fault. And I think the next big issue that's on everybody's mind regarding Seahawks football, Brandon, has to be Shaquille Griffin talking about how he would just love to be back in Seattle, but it's a business, man.
You know, it was either that or Alex Collins re-signing for a one-year deal for an unknown amount to come back to Seattle. These are the conversations that are happening going into free agency.
Hot topics.
That's why March is just such a big deal. It's that there's so much going on.
Yeah. I'm really interested to hear what Shaquille's team has to say, or if his camp has anything that he wants to get out there.
Yeah, you always want to hear from the camp.
But you said you enticed me into doing a show today because you said you had content. So guess what? That was everything I had that I actually wanted to talk about. So I don't know what else there would be to talk about, but go ahead, Brandon.
There is more.
Tell me what you got.
Well, let's start with one of my favorite things from this past week, because if you follow along on Twitter, you probably saw this as a Seahawks fan, and you saw it and wondered what the heck is behind this, because Diana Rossini put out a tweet that says, "I was told the Seahawks are not, quote, shopping Russell Wilson, but calls made from other teams inquiring have been answered." So this was, and this was in response to Dove Kleinman tweet talking about how the Seahawks are making calls to teams about trading away Russ. And so this was like a clarifying tweet. It just seemed weird to me that you would need to specify that when teams call the Seahawks about Russ and maybe they weren't answered immediately, that the Seahawks actually returned phone calls when people were calling.
Yeah. The original clip of what she said on Pat McAfee's show is hilarious because, I mean, if you listen to that, it was already clear. Right.
I think a lot of people probably didn't hear that Pat McAfee clip. And so when they saw the tweet, it catches you out of the blue and you're trying to figure out in your mind, like, why, where does this fit in? And why is it news that the Seahawks are returning phone calls? And I do have that clip for anybody who missed it.
And I learned early in my career too, you have to be very careful with the wording of asking for a trade, demanding a trade. I made a mistake with Kirk Cousins years ago, where he, you know, was told it wasn't going to be a competition at the quarterback position with Robert Griffin III back then. And he's like, well, I really don't want to be here if it's not a competition, right? Because he wanted a shot. And it came out somehow as a demand. And, that crushes a player, right? And his reputation. And Kirk had built such a great one as being such a good player and a good person. And yeah, so the word demand in reference to Russell Wilson, I don't sense that, but I know there's been calls made on both sides going to Seattle and from Seattle to other teams.
Oh, so Seattle shopping. Holy shit. Holy Seattle Seahawks are shopping Russell Wilson right now. Via Diana Rossini. ESPN. He's demanding that they shop him.
What do you have to do? Pounding on the table. Get me out of here. It rains too much.
Is that from our show? Oh, no.
What?
Daily Caller tweets, "The Seahawks are making trade calls for Russell Wilson. Should fans revolt?" That's because of our show.
So this, and the reason why I picked this clip is because this is them responding to what she had said earlier on in the show. And I could have just clipped the part where she was talking about, you know, making the calls of both ways, but I wanted to leave in the unedited bit, the fact that they were just talking about how important context was and, you know, not saying it was a demand, for Pat then to kind of jokingly say that Seattle is shopping Russell Wilson. And you can see her, if you watch the video and just don't listen to the audio, she's like waving her hands like, no, no. And then she kind of gets that he's making a joke about it. And that's when she says the comment about pounding on the table about, you know, demanding a trade to get out of Seattle because of the rain. It was funny. And then just to see some media outlets report it as Seattle shopping Russell Wilson.
Yeah. So two things about that clip. Number one, and we should all know this by now, and if you don't, I've been trying to drum it into the heads of every single human being alive. Say it with me. If it happens on Twitter, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And this is a great, great example of it. Because again, if you saw it on Twitter, you're like, wait, what? And then you actually listen to the clip and it's like, oh, I see. And number two on this and about that clip, Pat has a great show. It might be one of the most fun sports shows out there right now.
It is fun.
He was just having fun with the phrasing, making fun of the reporter, you know, and just having a good time about it. And then you can see how people salivating for clicks use that sort of stuff or twist so many things. And so that also makes you wonder a little bit about just where the situation is with Russ and the Hawks and Pete and Russ and all that stuff. So I guess when you said you had content, you wanted to talk about Russell Wilson. I didn't know. I didn't know that would be a hot topic.
Maybe people still want to talk about him because I have email responses. There's things that can be talked about.
Absolutely.
But I do want to take it in a little bit different direction because there was one thing, and I guess it is related to Russell Wilson, but I think we can take it from a little bit different angle because I was listening to Dan Patrick. He came on the Softy Mahler and Dick Fain show on 950 KJR in Seattle. And there were a couple things that he said that really struck me as wondering if maybe Pete Carroll has a messaging problem when it comes to Russell Wilson and maybe just the Seahawks philosophy in general. Because when you think about Pete Carroll and the Seahawks philosophy, you think about running the football, playing great defense. That's what Pete believes are the keys to winning football games. And I think he has been so effective in that the message has gotten out there and it's being repeated at the national level.
I thought Russ was going to be MVP this past season. Mm-hmm. I thought that they were going to finally let him throw and he was going to throw for 40, 45 touchdowns. But when I would tune into a Seahawks game, it would normally be 12-9 going into the fourth quarter and the Seahawks were trailing and it always felt like Pete Carroll would go, hey, we ran the football the first three quarters. Now can you go out there and win a game for us? That has always been my impression of Russ. Very, very few quarterbacks, if any, would I take with a game on the line in a 2-minute drill.
Adam, how many touchdowns did Russell Wilson throw for last season?
Catfish! Tons.
40.
Yeah.
You hear Dan Patrick start off that response saying, I thought Russ would go out there and throw 40 to 45 touchdowns this season. Well, really, Dan? Because he actually freaking did.
And it is funny because when you do look at Russ's stats towards the end of the year, I mean, they stack up against the guys who are thought of as volume passers in pretty much every category except for attempts and yards, right? Like, yeah, when it comes to completion percentages and touchdowns and interceptions and things like that, and touchdowns being the one, right? That's the one out of all the stats that matter the most, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Interceptions maybe being second and then, you know, but possibly attempts and then yards. But the idea that Pete is just about running the rock and playing defense and that's it is kind of ridiculous because Pete's about winning first and foremost, and he'll go after it any way that he can. I mean, he doesn't care so much that it fits the formula as he does about winning, I think, personally. Now, Dan isn't wrong in the idea that many Seahawks games are 12-9 going into the fourth quarter and the Seahawks are down and you got to go ahead and, you know, now, hey, Russ, throw the ball and win the game. Yeah, that's been a formula of Seahawks football. And the whole reason for it is keep the game close. And then when you have a great quarterback, turn it over to him with the ability to win the game and the opportunity to win the game and win the game and then win lots of games and then go to the playoffs every year. So, yeah, I guess maybe I'm contradicting myself in this, you know, same statement here. But, you know, people win however way that he can. And short of early down passing statistics in terms of volume, Russ is in the conversation of the guy with the best stats at the end of the year. So it's not like he's being held back in a lot of ways, that it's an optics thing.
But even in this last season, it wasn't that. It wasn't pound the ball into the offensive line for three straight quarters. Oftentimes there were some of those close games, but it's just, I think it's all of the years that have built up that have got that idea into the national consciousness, because I didn't see that. I bet if you went back and listened to all our shows, we talked about how this team wasn't running the football enough the entire season. I think that was a consistent thing for what we watched throughout the season. They threw the ball plenty. The difference was the effectiveness of the passing from the first half of the season to the second half of the season. So I don't necessarily buy that much of, you know, I buy partially into what Dan is saying, but I think it's more the Pete Carroll messaging that has gotten into his psyche. And then I think there's more of it that we hear in this other clip.
I just never felt like, and maybe you guys can correct me, I never felt like Seattle was all in on Russell Wilson. It's a weird vibe that I've always gotten. And maybe it's not there, but that's the feeling I've gotten. And I'm talking about not the city. I'm talking about Pete Carroll, you know, management of Russ. I don't know. It was weird because I think that defense led the team. They were the personality of the team for such a long period of time. Marshawn was a big personality. And I always felt like Russ maybe didn't fit into those groups. And I don't know if they truly embraced Russ as a, you know, Hall of Fame quarterback.
That is so weird. That is such a weird, he says that, you know, he's got a weird feeling. The whole statement was weird. That they haven't been all in on Russell Wilson? Well, here, newsflash. Let's start from the very beginning. They canned Matt Flynn in a hurry to be all in on Russell Wilson before the first season that he was on the team even started. But they're not all in on Russell Wilson?
Well, and if you go into the Athletic article, the idea that, oh, they're out scouting Josh Allen, you know, scouting Patrick Mahomes.
Yes. It's called due diligence. It's called due diligence. One of these guys falls to you late in the first round. You take him if you like what you saw after doing your due diligence, right? At the very least, it's a trade asset that you can then parlay into, you know, more offensive linemen for Russ or whatever the hell it is that you want to do. And I know Russ got all offended and Team Russ got all butthurt because they batted their eyes at another quarterback in the draft. But seriously, get over yourself. I mean, did KJ Wright have a hissy fit when they drafted Jordan Brooks?
No.
No. Every other player on a football team lives with the reality and the knowledge that every day the team is trying to get better. And if they think they can replace you with somebody better and or cheaper, they'll do it in a heartbeat. It's a business.
And that's why I go back to Dan's statement and wondering if Pete Carroll has a messaging problem, because, and it's not that it's a problem in terms of the Seahawks and how they function, because the perception from the national media, it doesn't have any impact on how or any influence on how the team plays necessarily. But I think it does have an impact in the way that Russ wants to be perceived nationally as, you know, a top five guy, you know, future Hall of Famer, as someone who is the controlling force on whether or not a team wins or loses games.
Which he is right now, by the way.
Which he is.
Which he has been his entire career.
And he is. And that's why I think that it would be helpful to have a little bit of a shift from Pete Carroll. And it's not that the philosophy of the team has to change. We can all still know that running the ball and playing great defense is a way to win once you get into the playoffs. I think of it as political messaging. You know, at times, politicians will campaign on certain things. It doesn't mean that ultimately that's what they're going to do once they get into office, but they know
or never.
Right. Okay. But that's the way to kind of win people over and get a national message out there. So if Pete were to come out and say, hey, we're a team that's built around our quarterback, Russell Wilson is our guy that's going to lead us to our next Super Bowls, and we're going to do it because he's a future Hall of Famer. If he were to come out and say those types of things, I think that would start to get out, and it would at least create that sense among media that the Seahawks are all in on Russell Wilson, even though we know that they are. But it's weird to me to hear those types of concerns at a national level.
It's such a ridiculous conversation. The fact that we're even having this conversation is so freaking ridiculous. Because basically, if I'm going to break this down to what you just said here, and I think you're onto something as well, is Pete needs to talk more glowingly about Russell in public so that Russell's ego feels stroked the right way, in that the national media also picks up on it and starts talking in that manner too. So Russ's ego feels good. Like, we're really not going to change much. We're still going to ask you to win or lose the game at the end and you be the man, which, by the way, in Dan's little clips there, he comes out and says, yeah. And then they hand it over to Russ and they ask him to win or lose the game, right? It is in your hands. You're thought of as one of the top five dudes when the game is on the line. People do fear you. That's your reputation as a winner. Like, out of all the things, you'd think that would be the most important. No. Well, I guess we need to have Pete be more like a politician and just talk about how the offense runs through Russ and blah, 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 whatever it is that apparently, I guess, Russ needs to hear, and just to smooth the situation over going forward. And so that the national media talks the right way. So when Russ hears it, he likes what he hears. That's just, it's so absurd that that's a place where we're at. And a lot of the comments that we got, a lot of the emails were like, that's not it at all. He's tired of getting hit. He just wants offensive linemen. It's like, look, if he just wanted offensive linemen, none of this would have happened over the last month and a half. None of this would have.
Because that's a conversation you can have internally.
Yes. And some people will say, well, he's tried to have this conversation internally the last few years, and it hasn't panned out. And it's like, look, his number one catfish isn't that he's getting hit. His number one complaint is that it's not Russ-centric enough. And I think that's where I have a difference with a lot of the people that are like, this is all Pete's fault and John's fault, and Russ is totally in the right here, and I totally get it.
Well, and that goes back to some of those comments in the article with saying that it's part of a PR game, that Russ is trying to protect himself, he's trying to save face. And that's kind of what led me down this idea of, and you touched on it, is that when people have an ego, what do you need to do? You have to soothe the ego in a public way. And that may be to the point. And if that's what keeps the team together and ultimately what you need to do to get the best performance, Pete Carroll is about getting the best performance out of the guys that he has. And if he needs, if this is what it takes for him to realize that that's one of the things that he needs to do with one of his star players, he should make that shift.
Yeah. I also think Russ should make the shift in mentality as well. And maybe feel a little less of a big, like, just get out of his own freaking way here. It's, I don't know. I have a really hard time when people start putting their ego ahead of the things that really matter. This is really, really rubbed me the wrong way when it comes to Russ.
You made that pretty clear in the last show. And yeah. I think there were some people that took exception to the ego type comment, but I think
okay.
I think you're onto something. I know that it bugs you, but I also recognize that for athletes especially, and I mean, there's people out there that aren't even athletes that just are in the workplace, that they need to know that their contributions are valued. And
yeah, yeah, you're a millennial. You don't need your hand held. You don't need a trophy for showing up to work every day.
Okay, this is...
You don't need the coach to come out and talk about how wonderful you are and how you're a future Hall of Famer every freaking day. Grow up.
Adam, borderline Gen X millennial.
I'm not borderline nothing. I'm a Gen Xer all the way, baby.
I think we were the very last cutoff year.
That's not true. 1982 is the cutoff.
Okay.
But seriously, I mean, I've never understood the need to have all the attaboys all the time. Like, to me, it's pathetic to have to be patted on the head and told you're pretty every day. I mean, I've known
people who are like that. And yes, it does make it tough to deal with if you're the type of person who has trouble dealing with that, or gosh, I don't even hardly know how to put it in words, because I'm also someone who struggles with giving out not undeserved praise, but praise for praise's sake.
Constant.
Yeah.
Constant praise. Yeah. For the sake of praise. And so I guess if Pete starts to do that to manage Russ's ego at this point, I mean, doesn't that put you right back at where you were when there was strife between the LOB and Russ because they felt like he was coddled? Does he want to be recoddled? Is this where we're at?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. Because I will say this, as much as I pin this on Russ having a little bit of a hissy here and needing his ego to be stroked, there is a legit point about the offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
And it's something that we have absolutely complained about for the last forever years, right?
Right.
Yes, Russ does have a point there. And yes, he should be supported better in that way. And yes, I would like to see the team go that direction.
Go but back two shows. That was our commentary 100%.
But the idea that Russ hasn't been properly supported by the organization to have success in the long term, that is laughable. That is laughable.
That's why the messaging is more for the national perspective and not for what the reality with the team is. And I think that it would bring some balance to that, is more of my point.
Sure. It just feels wholly unnecessary, and it's ridiculous that we even have to do that.
And it's not that you have to do it. It's more that it would be to bring the reality of the situation in Seattle. It would bring the national perspective more up to the line of what we see as what's going on.
Maybe. Or they might blow it all out of proportion in a totally different direction too. You never know. But I think that leads to kind of the second half of this Russ conversation, is like, all right, what do they do regarding the offensive line?
Free agency is coming up. We're here.
And I'm not going to lie, I was a little bummed that Justin Britt actually signed with the Texans. But then again, if Russ's complaint is that they haven't invested in the right offensive lineman during his tenure there, do you think bringing Justin Britt back in would have been something that appeased Russ? I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, and even if you look at Justin Britt, he is about 4 or 5 years removed from his Pro Bowl seasons.
Yes.
Injured last year, the 2019 season, even before he went out injured, he wasn't playing all that well. The whole year previously, it wasn't, in terms of the pressures allowed and those sorts of things, not great. And so, yeah, it would feel like going back to more of the same. Now, are they going to go out and spend big time on the offensive line? Are they going to be able to do that?
They're able to do it. Now, are they willing to do it, right? With guys like Griffin and KJ and those guys coming up here and for a new deal as well. So where do the priorities go? And maybe this is ultimately the chess game Russ is trying to play here. All right. Are you going to end up paying more defensive dudes, or are you going on offense here? Are they going to pay Chris Carson? And does Russ view Chris Carson as one of those guys that you should pay, right?
Right.
I mean, is that somebody that he's the running back? This is the guy that runs the rock, and he's mad about running the ball too much, apparently, maybe. So what do you do?
I think you have to bring in at least one
two
big
guys.
Name at the center or guard spot, and, you know, a middle of the pack dude to at least address and provide some competition.
Yeah.
We saw the news here this past week that BJ Finney was cut from the Bengals, and kind of the story around him, and that he came in out of shape. And part of the reason why was because if he were to get injured in the offseason working out, then he would potentially lose the money within the contract. And, you know, with COVID being an issue, yeah, it's kind of one big risk that you're taking bringing in unproven outside guys like Finney. I'd definitely be much more comfortable bringing in a guy that you know has proven and plays at a Pro Bowl caliber level, but those guys are going to be expensive.
They're going to be expensive. So that's another thing. Does Russ want to rework his deal a little bit? You know, I see an alert just yesterday. Tom Brady to rework deal again with the Bucks. Wonder why he's doing that. Think he wants to win another chip? My guess is yes.
Well, Russ can easily, you know, they can move money around with his contract anyway, and he doesn't have to lose any money. We've seen.
I doubt Brady really, quote, loses that much money.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
It depends on when you get it.
Exactly.
Well, the J.J. Exactly. Watt contract is a great example, because here's a guy who came in and to go to Arizona. He's looking at a cap hit in Arizona of under $5 million for 2021. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it all has to do with the way that they structured that contract. He gets a $2.5 million base salary. He gets a $12 million signing bonus. But the way they do the signing bonus is they spread it out over 5 years. And he's not going to be with the Cardinals. Well, he could be with them for 5 years, but the way they spread it out, it's with void years. And so he's really only under contract for base salary for two seasons. This season, $2.5 million. Next season, $11.25 million. And they spread the bonus out over 5 years. These are the kinds of tricks that teams have the ability to do to pay guys and kind of push off some of that salary. We've seen it with Drew Brees. He's being paid, I think, $5 or $6 million. Technically, well, he gets the money in terms of a bonus right up front, and then they spread it out over 5 years, and the Saints end up paying $6 million a year over the course of 5 years, just knowing that they're going to be paying him and he's going to be gone, and they just hope the salary cap goes up enough that they can still be competitive and continue to make those loan payments for Drew Brees, essentially.
Right. They have been competitive, and they have been able to afford it. Now, they're over the cap again this year, and that's going to be tough for them to deal with, but there is a part of me that is Team Russ in the sense of, let's load up. Let's go for it. You know? I mean, why not? Yeah, let's mortgage a little bit of the future and take this window. The other way to look at it is, well, screw that. Let's make sure that we win long term. Let's get those draft picks back for somebody like Russ. And the more I think about it and I start looking at some of the quarterbacks in this draft, there's a part of me that I don't mind replacing one Wilson with another Wilson. You know, if the Jets want to give us number two and then a boatload of other picks and all that, maybe. I mean, I don't think it's totally off the table.
Well, and that's why, as general manager, you don't close the conversation down. You let teams know that you're willing to make things happen. And even though the Jets weren't one of those teams, say you can do a three-team deal with the Bears and the Jets, and so Russ gets to go to the Bears, and the Bears seem like the obvious team for a trade destination to me, just based on
why?
Because they would be willing to give up absolutely everything. You could fleece
the Bears.
And
what do they have exactly?
Well, they don't really have it. That's why it would have to be some kind of three-team deal to where maybe the Jets get some of the Bears stars. We get the Jets draft picks. And that's why I don't think it would happen. But that would be the type of scenario that would have to play out to even make it work.
Yeah, I've been listening to these Bears trade rumors. And these make absolutely zero sense.
Oh, just between the Seahawks and Bears, there is no deal outside of the Chicago Bears being able to include the Chicago Bulls franchise as part of the deal to get a basketball team in Seattle that would actually make a Seahawks fan want to make that trade.
That, yeah, throw in the Bulls. I mean, even though they've been a dumpster fire for a good long time, like,
yeah. But then you have basketball in Seattle. So but then you have, thanks, Russ.
And Russ always wanted to bring the Sonics back. This might be the way that he does it, right? Yeah, but there's just the Seahawks and Bears, a straight up trade between them is so laughable. Why would the Seahawks want to go from being the Seahawks to being the Bears? Because that's exactly what they would do. So you trade Russ, you get Khalil Mack. And whatever else, you know, that's Nick Foles. like that's a get. Like, you should be excited that they're going to get Nick Foles back.
It goes back to Pete Carroll's philosophy. Everybody thinks that Pete wants to play defense and run the football, and they think, oh, Nick Foles would be great in Pete Carroll's system because that's exactly what Pete wants to do.
No, Nick Foles would not be great in any system. He caught lightning in the bottle for half a season or two. There's been two stretches of half a season that he has caught lightning in the bottle. They both happened to be in Philadelphia. The first time he had Chip Kelly as a head coach, and the second time he had Doug Peterson as a coach and won a chip, right? Yeah. But that's fluky. That is so fluky. So I don't understand if you make that sort of trade, right? You get a couple draft picks and all that. So now you just become the Chicago Bears. You've got Khalil Mack, a generational pass rusher. You betcha. A really impactful defensive player. Cool. And then now you have an offense that's totally anemic, just like the Bears. And you're sorting through the Nick Foleses and the Trubisky's of the world to try to solve quarterback again. Why? There's no franchise that is going to give up a franchise quarterback to go that far backwards and not have a shot at another franchise quarterback in a trade. That's not happening.
It would have to be Deshaun Watson, a top three pick where you know you're going to get a guy that's, and you have to be all in on that quarterback, knowing that he's going to be a future star quarterback. I think maybe the lowest that you can even consider is a guy like Dak Prescott.
There's 0%. That's how much 0% is how much I would consider getting Dak Prescott in a trade. Like, why in the world would I trade for a middle tier quarterback that I'm about to have to pay big time money who just had his leg reconstructed?
Right.
Okay. Why? What is the upside to that?
Zero. You're at 0%. I'm at 1%. As the, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot of people that seem to think that, like, getting Dak back would be like a good thing somehow. I mean, if I'm the Cowboys, there's no way I pay Dak. Not anywhere near what he's asking.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like when the Vikings paid Kirk Cousins. It's like, why in the world are you paying a middle tier quarterback top 10 money? It just doesn't make sense. There's a handful of dudes that you pay that way, and he's not one of them. I'd say Watson is one of those guys that you pay that way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I don't even know if the Texans are going to give him up. I still don't know.
I mean, the only one of these trades on a quarterback perspective that makes any sort of sense, like current players that you trade for, not draft picks, right? Yeah, yeah. And the ability to draft one of the college guys, would be for Derek Carr, only because there's another middle tier quarterback, but at least you're only paying a middle tier money.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, that's at least value for value. I mean, it's definitely a bump, a major bump down from Russ to Carr.
If you were to say pick between Nick Foles and Derek Carr, okay, yeah, I guess I would take Derek Carr.
Hell yeah, I'd take Derek Carr. Yeah. But
Things would have to be, and that's, you know, I was going back and forth with Rob Staton a little bit on Twitter the other day, and I'm probably putting words in. I'd rather have this conversation face to face with Rob.
Yeah.
But I just get the sense that knowing that Russ is unhappy is a reason for him to say, okay, let's consider moving on. And I'm not to that point to where I can, you know what? I can deal with Russ being a little bit unhappy with being in Pete Carroll's system, if that's truly how he feels. I would have to see a huge dip in performance from Russ before I'd have to say, okay, well, they obviously have to move on because his happiness level is impacting the winning of the franchise.
Yeah. And yeah, the Seahawks are under no obligation to get rid of Russ. None. Zero. They do not have to do anything. They really don't. And
he's under contract for 3 years. You can franchise him. You can use the franchise tag at the end of the 3 years. He's under team control for the next 4 years easily, and probably five if you really wanted to push it.
Yeah, if you wanted to be kind of a catfish GM, sure. Yeah, you could probably push that to five. And they just, everybody proposes these trades, and they're always good for the other teams, like that ridiculous one that was floated out by Nick Wright that we covered on the last show. And then, like, it's like, cool, they get Russ, and, you know, this guy goes over here, and everybody gets better, and then it's Seahawks, here's the poo-poo platter.
Here's Jimmy Garoppolo.
It's a joke. So, yeah, how unhappy can Russ possibly be to force their hand? And the thing is, all right, you're unhappy. Go out there and play. You're under contract, right? And we're going to play our way. You can be pouty McPowderface all you want. Do you think Russ would purposely let his performance drop because he was pouting?
There's no way.
That flies totally in the face of everything that he says he's about.
Well, and even look at a guy like Deshaun Watson, who he had an outstanding season for stats wise in terms of how he played as a quarterback. He just didn't have a team around him. He didn't have a coach that was good. He went out, he threw for nearly 5,000 yards, threw for 33 touchdown passes. You know, his yards per completion was up around, 12, 13. His completion percentage was over 70%. Finding guys that have thrown more than 4,500 yards, completion percentage over 70%, and more than 30 touchdowns in a season, there's only, I think it's less than a handful of guys who have ever done that. And most of the guys who have done that are named Drew Brees.
No, that's a true fact. And look, when it comes to Watson, some people, I saw a headline saying that Russ and Watson are dealing with pretty much the exact same situation. And it's like, what bizarre world do you live in? Right. The Texans have been organizationally one of the biggest jokes of the NFL and since Deshaun Watson has been there.
Oh, yeah.
Why on earth would he have any confidence that they were going to turn stuff around? And then on top of that, when they went to hire Bill O'Brien's replacement, they gave him more or less the freeze out. They didn't really consult him much at all.
Yeah.
So if you're Deshaun Watson, yes, that is a situation where I look at the player and go, yeah, man, get the hell out of there. That place sucks. Russ has won a title with this team, had just won the division, and year in, year out has a legit shot. Those are light years apart in terms of the situation.
Deshaun Watson was able to have winning seasons with Bill O'Brien as the head coach for his time in 2018, 2019.
And GM.
And then in 2020, when they fired Bill O'Brien, who, not even a mediocre coach, and they go 4-12. So that's what a really good quarterback does without, any kind of coaching and still able to go 4-12 and able to have a Pro Bowl caliber season. And I would be upset, too, if I were him and that they went out and got a dude who's has no experience at head coach. At least if you brought in a guy who was a retread and had some experience, I think that could make it work. But yeah, completely different situations.
Well, whether he wanted a guy with zero experience or all the experience, I mean, it doesn't much matter. Just
involve him.
Just whatever Deshaun's most comfortable with, maybe take that into consideration. And there's a part of Russ that's all he's asking for right now, right? Well, I want to be more involved.
By all accounts, with Shane Waldron, he was part of that.
It sounds like, yes, That was going to be my point, okay. Is that it does look as if the Seahawks have given him a little more influence than, say, I don't know, the starting defensive tackle on the team, right? Do you think Pudah Ford has, do you think they call him and ask him about who the next OC is going to be? Or even if they were going to replace Ken Norton? Do you think they're calling him and asking
him? Or even
him?
If they were going to replace Clint Hurt, right?
Yeah, no. So he is consulted more. He is asked for his input more. I guess that's why at the end of the day, it's like, I hear all these demands from Russ, and short of spending big on the offensive line, which instead of doing that, they tried to spend big on weapons, right? Whether that's Jimmy Graham or Percy Harvin, or, you know, they've tried to go out and improve the weapons around him. His biggest complaint being the offensive line. All the rest of his complaints, they've been addressed or met.
I think that's part of the good news of this offseason is that now, and we brought it up a couple shows back, he's pointed to the offensive line. Generally, when Russ says go out and get this, they've gone out and got that. So if that's going to be offensive line this year, then we might be in for, you know, as long as they choose wisely.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
We'll be in for a good 2021.
I still believe it's a 0% chance that they're trading Russ. I just don't see how you make all the numbers work and with the cap hits and all that. It doesn't right now, especially this year, it does not make the Seattle Seahawks better to get rid of Russell Wilson for whatever the package is.
You did touch on, I would put it at 1% because if they were to happen to orchestrate the kind of deal to go from one Wilson to a new Wilson, mm-hmm. maybe there's enough there that they would, and even, you know, going back to other seasons, if some team were willing to give up more than they could say no to, they would have to consider that.
I honestly believe that it requires the second pick of the draft. Because we all know that Trevor Lawrence is going number one, most likely.
Although Chris Sims did put Zach Wilson as his number one overall.
I think after watching just a tiny bit of Zach Wilson, I would still take Trevor Lawrence just based on his size. And, you know, just he's put out a lot more tape. And so you get to see some of the warts as well, where with Zach Wilson, I mean, it's been, you know, basically two seasons that he's played.
Yeah.
And against lesser competition. But looking at Zach Wilson and the little bit that I have watched of him, he's fun. I mean, he's got real talent. I think, it's a tiny bit. I need to go back and watch more. But based on that, I think he is actually what people thought Johnny Manziel could be.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, more to talk about in terms of quarterbacks down the road.
But he's no surefire thing.
Even with Trevor Lawrence, you can't convince me that he's surefire going to be a dude who's going to play 20 years.
But, and the funny thing is with all this, at the end of the day, we haven't even had the conversation that I think probably 30 to 40% of the fan base is on. I think this is their corner. Why are we even talking about getting rid of Russ? Why are we even doing anything with Russ? How are we not totally appeasing Russ? And why is Pete still here?
Ooh.
They would love to see, like, hey, if this is between Pete and Russ, get the hell rid of Pete.
Yeah, I think there's sentiment out there. And there was even, Warren Sharp who was saying that if you have to trade somebody, trade Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
And I did make the comment that would be interesting, an interesting conversation between John Schneider and Pete Carroll with the general manager who's technically lesser in title to Pete Carroll's title overall with the team as the executive vice president, essentially trying to trade your boss. Doesn't seem like it'd go
well.
What
if Pete wanted to trade himself?
Maybe he does. What's a better situation for Pete Carroll to win a next Super Bowl? Where can he go that he could win with the team in place?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce Arians dies of a heart attack this offseason and Pete trades himself to the Bucks.
Yeah, well, not dies, but, you know, just health concerns have to make him withdraw from the team.
Well, I'm not hoping that he dies. I'm just saying, like, I was making up a hypothetical of how this would go down.
I think that's bad karma.
But also wearing those hats is bad karma, too. So
it's really Bruce's fault.
No, we all know it's never Bruce's fault.
But could Pete Carroll, could he orchestrate a trade to Houston and win with Deshaun Watson? Maybe he's the answer there.
Maybe if Pete really hates his life, he would do that.
Yeah.
Like, he's just mad at himself. Wants to punish himself.
Yeah, that's the only reason you go to Houston. Out of the Pacific Northwest, the better weather in Houston.
Well, I mean,
like if he sees that, as his retirement destination after 10 years.
Is it really better weather when you get buried by a hurricane every other year? No, thanks.
Oh, yeah. They are kind of near the coast.
And the humidity? GR double gross. No, absolutely not.
Yeah, Pete does seem like a more SoCal type of guy.
Yeah.
Chargers?
Yeah.
That would make sense. That would there be a go. Pete Carroll move.
Yeah.
You could see himself winning with Justin Herbert long term.
Yeah. He'd probably get him moved back down to San Diego for the surfing, you know?
Yeah.
I think they surf in San Diego. Is the surfing good in San Diego? I don't know anything about surfing.
They also surf in LA.
They don't do. No. nothing good happens in LA.
Come on now.
I'm not lying.
The people on the beach. That live on the beach there. Huntington Beach? That's in L.A., right?
No, I don't think so. I think it's in Huntington Beach.
I know. Well, I think it's adjacent to L.A.
Well, they're tainted then.
That's where Pete would live. See, we've already picked out a location.
Probably.
I think that Russ going anywhere is just as unlikely as Pete going anywhere.
It seems as absurd, doesn't it? So at the end of the day, I mean, maybe we fell on this in the last pod too, and you've heard it said other places, they're both gonna have to put on their big boy pants and work this out.
And I think that they both can.
Yeah.
But I also think that if you are going to pick a side and be Team Russell Wilson, that's the side to pick, because
is it?
I guess Pete could still coach for another 10 years. Russ can play for another 10 years.
Well, so here's the thing, is I'm a fan of the Seattle Seahawks. And I'm also a fan of Russell Wilson.
Okay. But Pete Carroll's not the Seattle Seahawks.
And I'm a fan of the Seattle Seahawks, and I'm also a fan of Pete Carroll. But with that said, if Russ got himself out of Seattle and went to freaking Dallas, like really aggressively orchestrated all that and put it all in place, right?
Yeah.
Guess who I'm not a fan of anymore?
Russell Wilson.
Right. My loyalty is more to the team than it is to any given player on the team.
Yeah.
And that is a difference between guys of a certain age and youngsters, you know?
It all comes back to millennials for you.
I mean, I think it does.
There's probably a portion of people that would follow Russ to wherever he went, but there's a portion that would just still be fans of the team. And there's people who, if the Seattle Seahawks didn't win, that they would go and be fair weather Seattle Seahawks fans. Like, I'm a fair weather Mariners fan.
Well, that's fine. But neither of us are fair weather football fans. So that's never going to happen.
Well, like, yeah, that wouldn't happen for us.
Right. And no, I wasn't mad at Richard Sherman when he, you know, ended up down in San Francisco. Right.
Yeah.
Because it was towards the end of his career.
It's not that I'm not a fan of Sherman though. No. Now, when you bring that up,
you're not.
No, I said it's not that I'm not.
Yeah.
I know the double negative's confusing.
Well, yeah, a little bit, but that's all right.
I'm a fan of Richard Sherman when he's not playing the Seahawks.
Yes. Yeah, still wished him well and all that stuff. But also, I mean, that felt more like the team being like, no, we're done with you, than him being done with the team.
That's true.
You know, I mean, this is.
That's good.
If Russ wants to, yeah. I guess this is probably where it all boils down to me. And it's taken us two podcasts to get there. If Russ takes his knife out and tries to stab the Seattle Seahawks in the back, I'm pissed.
Right.
And this feels a little stabby.
It feels like it's getting close to stabby.
Yeah.
Well, one guy, when I look at the deal that JJ Watt got over the course of 2 years, if you're looking at paying $20 million over 2 years for Carlos Dunlap, it brings down the cap hit. It keeps him here for another year. You could probably even make that a 3-year deal if he's willing to take it. But that is logical to me, like, because absolutely cutting him just to get the $14 million in cap space makes no sense to me.
Nope. This makes all the sense. Carlos Dunlap, a better player at this stage of his career than Emmett Watt. I mean, JJ Watt. Doesn't the Watt thing feel a little like Emmett Smith going to the Cardinals? Just a little bit.
No, because I do think that J.J. Watt, I wanted J.J. Watt in Seattle. And
yes,
him going to the Cardinals, I'm not going to turn around and say that he's like a garbage player at the end of his career now. And now I can see where people say, you know, maybe you'll be lucky to get 10 games out of J.J. Watt. Maybe that's true. I would, at that price that the Cardinals paid J.J., I would take 10 game J.J. Watt for the salary that he's getting in Arizona.
Right now, he's a slightly above average player with a very concerning injury history. And he's not like Emmett Smith when he went to the Cardinals in terms of Emmett was washed.
Yeah.
And he wasn't. And he was drastically overrated when he was with the Cowboys. And
stop it. Stop.
So like that, this is different. J.J. was actually dominant for a few years and could have been the number one, you know, player in the league.
I can't according tell to the top anymore 100. If you say that because you truly believe it or just because you know that it bugs me.
I do truly believe it. I do. And it bugs you, which, you know, that's
the cherry on the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I'm not so concerned about JJ going to Arizona is just because I remember back to the Seattle Seahawks in 2017 and having a defensive line of Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Frank Clark, Jaron Reed, and Sheldon Richardson. And that defensive line, you know, gave the Seahawks a 9-7 football team because of Blair Walsh.
Somehow. But yeah, it does not feel like J.J. Watt is the missing piece to the Cardinals making a Super Bowl run.
No.
I mean, I don't know. It might be more, say, head coach, a quarterback that likes to throw it farther than a shadow, which is short anyways, because, you know,
he's short,
not all that tall. Yeah.
Being an Arizona fan and having a short quarterback like Kyler Murray, I don't know how you deal with it.
Well, it's more being the Arizona fan. It would be the tough part. It's more having a rinky-dink college quarterback as your quarterback. And I love how they call that Hail Mary that he threw this year the Hail Murray. And it's like, are you kidding me? That should be the Hail Hop. Like, that was 90% Hopkins, 10% Murray.
Yeah, when we talk about messaging, DeAndre Hopkins should have been out there saying that he needs more credit for that Hail Mary catch when it was Kyler Murray getting all of the run.
I don't understand it. And this is going to be an interesting year for Murray. I think this is going to be, I think what's going to happen is they're going to struggle. Everybody's going to throw Kingsbury under the bus and rightfully so to a degree. And then it'll be another full year after that before people realize that, oh, he's not a real NFL quarterback.
He'll get paid like Goff and Wentz did. Then he'll be getting to the point in his career that his running ability doesn't scare teams as much.
Yep. And you can't back off many teams with 5 yard out because that's all he throws.
Well, the only other Seahawks news that I have here, KJ Wright, he went on the Jim Rome show and he said that he's not taking a hometown discount to stay in Seattle.
And he also said that Russ will be the quarterback in Seattle for as long as he's there. And it's like, well, that's a little empty, KJ. We don't even know if you're going to be here next year. It's like, that's not all that reassuring.
Oh, for as long as KJ is here, like, but with us, like.
Yeah, in Seattle as a Seahawk.
Oh, I thought you just meant spiritually.
No, KJ will always be with me. He's part of the holy Seahawks trilogy, right?
The trilogy or Trinity?
Trinity. There it is. Yeah, I'm a pretty religious guy, so I know all the terms. The Seahawks, Holy Trinity.
Who are the other parts?
Well, it rotates, but right now it's got to be Russ, Wags, and KJ, right?
So if KJ were to leave because he didn't take a hometown discount,
yeah,
who joins the Holy Seahawks Trinity?
It's either Adams or DK.
Tyler?
Yeah. I mean, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about they fight for it?
Yes. Yes. I'm always for an Anchorman style fight.
Royal Rumble style. And then the last three are the Trinity.
There we go.
Good. See, this is the offseason stuff we need to be talking about.
Well, I blame Russ.
Let's get to the second half of the show. I want to bring in some email, Adam. We got some response and reaction from our previous show. And people may be tired of hearing about it if they were listening to a lot of local radio this past week. But there were some comments that I thought that we should respond to that just in reaction to what we had said the previous week.
Yeah, absolutely. I always love it when the little flockers chime in, and even the ones that aren't little flockers who chime in. But if you want to be taken seriously, you should probably become a little flocker. Just saying.
Getinintheflock.com. You can do that there. And yeah, we'll be talking more about those folks here shortly. But Emmett Brown came in and he was challenging you, Adam, on the idea of Russell Wilson having no leverage. He says, Russ has no leverage. Sounds like he controls the future of himself, Adams, and DK probably. Russ is doing what no one else can, putting Pete on notice. Pete wants a solid O-line? Since when? They've been working on that since 2010. Time's up, mofo. I love what Russ is doing.
I couldn't disagree more, to be honest. The idea that Russ has no leverage, number one, he's not the president or GM. Number two, he's under contract for a number of years. Number three, sure, maybe it affects the Jamal Adams conversation to a degree when it comes to John Schneider renegotiating a contract with him or negotiating a new contract with him. But the idea that Pete hasn't wanted a good offensive line, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. It's in his statement right there that he made. He said they've been working on it since whatever year he mentioned, right?
2010.
They've been working on it. That means they care. That means they're trying. And during the Super Bowl run, they spent a bunch of money on offensive line, right? So the idea that Pete doesn't want a good offensive line is ridiculous. What coach just looks at a position group and says, I don't want them to be good?
No, I think Pete Carroll wants all the position groups to be good. But there is one thing that I think Emmett points to where Russ does have leverage. And that is the leverage to put Pete on notice, at least going out and doing it this way. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, but he has the ability to put pressure on Pete Carroll and the Seahawks. So that way, if next year rolls around.
Look, here's the reason why that's not leverage, because he has no real power. He has no real power. So when he goes out and puts Pete on notice, quote unquote, if you're Pete Carroll or John Schneider, the only time you should feel pressure about that is if you let yourself feel pressure about that. Russ can't put that on you. He can attempt to, but you can decide, well, say whatever you want, Russ, but we're going to play this way. You're playing for us, and that's how it is. So get used to it. Russ has no power. There's no pressure he puts on them other than throwing a hissy fit.
Well, I think there is something to the idea, though, that public pressure can inform ownership's decision making.
I don't know. I'm not Jody Allen, so I guess I can't really speak to her mindset.
You really have to know what the relationship is between, you know, that probably more of the trinity of Jody Allen, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider, right?
Right. So I guess for me, and maybe this is where Emmett and I have a disconnect. Brandon, do you feel like there's any amount of public pressure that would make me change my mind on something that I believe in?
I think there is a portion of public opinion to where if you are pretty steadfast in your belief and there's enough statements that say, hey, have you really thought of this particular perspective? If there's enough of that, I can see how that can change people's minds sometimes.
Okay, so that's a big difference, right? The idea of, hey, have you thought about it from this perspective? And now you have new information and a new way of looking at something, right? That's one thing. And sure, you can change my mind with that sort of thing all day long. The difference is, like, if I were Jody Allen, and let's say I believed in Pete Carroll, and let's say I was the owner of the team right now.
Sure.
I'm not letting a player, this would be something that it was deep in my bones. I am not letting a player push the organization around. Never would I allow that to happen.
Yeah.
Right. And you could put all sorts of different points at me, different facts about, you know, oh, have you thought about it this way? Well, the thing is I really have thought about it all those ways. And just the idea that more people are saying the opposite perspective, that is not going to make me change my mind if I'm the owner of the Seahawks at that point, or an NFL owner, period.
Because public sentiment does not change how you feel about Pete Carroll as a person or as the leader of the franchise.
Or the direction of the organization, right. or whether or not as the owner of a franchise, I'm going to let a star player push the organization around.
Yeah.
That's how you end up in trouble as an organization. It's how you end up in trouble as a parent. When you let a 4-year-old run the household and you're not in charge as a parent, like that, you're going to have problems down the road.
You need to take charge.
Yeah. There's no amount of public pressure that
Adam
would change.
Emmert is saying that Russell Wilson is 4 years old. Moving on.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Put that on the Twitter.
Ed Essie comes in. He's a member of the flock, says, just noodling. Any chance this whole Russ drama thing is that Russ is in on a plan for John Schneider to get intelligence on these four teams? He's talking about the four teams that Russell Wilson named, the Cowboys, the Saints, the Bears, and the Raiders. And Ed says, I'm trying to think through what those four teams would have in common for Russ.
Oh, in terms of why he would want to go there?
Well, he's trying to figure out why those were the four teams named.
It was Saints, Bears, Jets.
No. Saints, Bears, Cowboys, Raiders were the ones that were attributed to Mark Rogers. I actually did some work into this, and I even made a field goals post out of it. Mm-hmm. I think that those four teams were the only four that made sense that have an offensive-minded head coach and an offensive-minded head coach that has taken a team to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other six teams, two of them are in the NFC West with, and, you know, Russ isn't going to, he knows he would never get traded within the NFC West.
No.
And then the other teams are Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers. Oh, and the other team was the Colts, who just traded for Carson Wentz. So, you know, obviously that one would probably be out because they just made a quarterback deal. So I think that if I were really going to try and put my finger on it, it would be that it's a passive aggressive move to say that if I'm going to go to another coach, I want to go to a winner who is an offensive minded head coach, not a defensive minded one like my current coach.
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it. And, you know, as far as Pete being on some sort of recon deal or something, that's kind of fun to think about.
John Schneider. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I like the conspiratorial aspect of that. I don't think Ed thinks it's true either, but,
I think that's what a lot of people were doing as they were trying to figure out, well, why those four teams? Because there's not, you know, if you're listening to what Russ is saying and that he wants offensive line help, then you wouldn't put the Bears and Raiders on that list because they have inferior offensive lines compared to what the Seahawks have shown what they had last year.
Yeah. And I think it depends on what your perception as a person, right? All of us out there, what you think Russ is saying. Some of us here, he's asking for offensive line help. He's tired of getting hit. And that's true to a degree. I guess maybe it's which one of these two things you put higher in priority in what he's saying. One is his legacy. One is offensive line.
Right. Okay.
That's basically it. And to me, this is far more about his legacy and what, you know, the way he's viewed, right? Then I want some better offensive linemen.
And if you could go find a coach that you know would stroke the ego, John Gruden would be that 100%.
Well, for a season, maybe. And then he'd be ripping you all day, every day in practice.
Not publicly, but I think publicly he would be the guy to do that, but privately being the guy to coach you hard.
Oh, yeah. He makes every quarterback miserable. Like, no, you wouldn't want to do that. But Sean Payton? Yeah, that's it. Of course he'd want to go there. And the idea, Matt Nagy has that reputation of being an offensive guy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Put the ball in my hands.
And he's one with Trubisky.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's 100% right. He just wants to throw the ball more. He wants it to be about him.
That's what those four teams tell me. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that he just wants it to be about him.
EWE2K on YouTube comes in, says, enjoyed the podcast. Thanks. Why should players give a damn about the team when that team doesn't care about them? If Russ were a bum, they'd get rid of him in a heartbeat, regardless of his humanitarian efforts. Seahawks have never built this team around Russ. The problems on this team are Schneider's and Pete's fault. They've continually mismanaged this team and expected Russ to continue to save the day, which he has. Not to say he's flawless, but we've known about those issues for years. He's performed as a top five quarterback the last 5 years. Has Pete or John Schneider performed at top five at their jobs? No, they haven't.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. And I will back that up here in a second.
Okay. Seahawks haven't even been successful in maintaining Pete's style. No dominant D, no intimidating rushing game. All we got is Russ. In terms of legacy, my feeling is he's referring to his football legacy because he's got the rest of his life to work on his off-field legacy. He wants to win and win it all. He wants to make sure this organization is committed to that and not to just winning 11 or 12 games a year. Also, he has a son that he named Wynn. Having a son makes many men consider their legacy. And for what that's worth, everyone has a legacy. It's not something that only the great among us get. Russ just wants to be memorable and remarkable. Can't say I blame him. I'm never surprised when an NFL quarterback has a big ego. Hell, high school quarterbacks have big egos. Seahawks need to stop bargain basement shopping and go big in free agency at center and left guard and draft a top five running back and tight end and on defense. Let all our free agents go, including KJ, restructure Dunlap and Adams. Go Hawks.
So let's begin with the idea. Have Pete and John performed at a top five level since they've been with the Seahawks and since Russ has been there?
Yeah, that you seem to take issue with that right away because you jumped right in.
Look, it's very easy for me to point to one thing that proves that out. And it's called winning. It's called winning. When you have won more games than every other organization other than the Patriots during that time frame, you are performing in the top five of your profession. And you can't say that it's all just Russ, because look at the Texans with Watson, right? They win like four games this last year when Watson plays great. That means you must have to be able to put a decent team around your quarterback to win 10, 11, 12 games. And I am so sick and tired of people taking a crap on winning double digit games every year as if that's no feat whatsoever. I have zero chill for that anymore. I'm done with that argument because it's absolutely ridiculous.
I think we can probably own a little bit of blame in that, because I think we say that every year that you have Russell Wilson, you're winning nine games.
Sure. And I'm not saying that, because Russ, if as long as you have a relatively competitive team, the quarterback, when you put it in his hands in the last 2 minutes, and you've got a guy who's crunch, you know, a good crunch time quarterback like Russ has been, yes, he flips, you know, 7, 8, 9 of those games every year. He tilts the field, just like John Schneider said when he drafted him. John and Pete have put enough talent and scheme around Russell Wilson to be considered one of the top five quarterbacks, right? And to have all those wins. I think it's absolutely laughable when people say that Pete and John stink at their job. Most fans would love to have those guys running their franchise. Love it.
Yeah. I think there's some criticism that you can say, yes, okay, the dominant defense hasn't been there. I think that you're nitpicking to a sense, though, and maybe if you're trying to move them out of the top five, that's what you would have to do, because you can point to John Schneider and say, well, they haven't drafted as well as some other teams, or definitely haven't drafted as well as they did in the early part of John and Pete together in Seattle. But you can't take away the fact that they've drafted some outstanding talent too here in the last 3 years.
And have managed sustained success in the NFL. That's not, you don't just do that by being a joke at your job as a GM or a coach. You don't.
No, and there's 32 other teams that are trying to do that and have not been successful at that long term, except for the Patriots.
Correct. And so then you get to the end of the comment there. What was it? Address tight end and running back, right?
Yeah, just go out and draft a top five running back and tight end.
So the problem is Pete and his philosophy, but you want to invest on a guy who half the time blocks, and then a guy who runs the football, okay, and running back. And then, but you're also mad at Pete because they spend too much money on the defense and they're not taking care of the offensive line, but re-sign Jamal and re-sign Dunlap.
You can extend them and reduce their cap for 2021.
Whatever. Either way, invest in those guys, right?
I don't have any problem with saying that.
But it's just, that's two-faced to me. That's two-faced to me. Like go ahead and you know, get a tight end who, again, half of his job is to be an extra offensive lineman, right? And then a running back, run the ball. Also, you know, take care of the defense. But Pete's philosophy of run the ball and defense is a problem. Yet you want to see those things addressed.
Yeah, I think you can say that you want it addressed in a specific way. You don't want them to go out and spend money at running back, but you want the I think this is in line with what we've talked about. Spend money on the offensive line and on the defensive line. And I guess the departure there would be that you and I would want KJ to stick around potentially. I think there's a cost limit to that sentiment, though.
And so,
yes, the spending money on the offensive line, drafting running back and tight end, I think that that's probably something that they'll do. Is
Brandon, okay, I'm 100% with you.
Okay.
To me and you, that course of action is, I believe, a good course of action. I'm not saying that his prescription is wrong. What I'm saying is you do that, but then trash Pete. See, we both think that you do all the things that were suggested there.
Yeah.
And you keep Pete. Pete's not, you know, we're not on get rid of Pete team. We're not on that team.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Oh, he's not a top five guy. He's terrible at his job. We're winning all because of Russ. Yet do it, Pete. I want to see them address all the things that Pete would like addressed. Yes, I would like to address those things too, but I also support Pete.
I see where the difference is, the distinction.
The contradiction there is ridiculous. Either pick having your cake or eat it. I don't care, but choose one.
Moving on to Kofi. He's one of our members of the flock in the Ring of Honor. Says, I half agree with Adam. This is about Russ's ego, but he does care about winning. He wouldn't speak a word if they were winning / competing for Super Bowls. They aren't. In the past 4 years, they have had one playoff win. He wants to be the best ever, win MVPs and championships. He's lost faith that Pete Carroll and John Schneider can help him do that. The regular season wins aren't enough to keep him satisfied. I think he liked Shoddy and thought they could fix things. Then Pete fired him. Pete's been shutting down his suggestions, so he's frustrated. I think he's skeptical about the direction of the team. He doesn't want to leave, but to be the best, maybe he thinks he may have to.
Kofi brings up some good points here, and actually, one of the things I did want to address was the idea of the regular season wins aren't enough. They've only won one playoff game in the last couple of years. Russ is frustrated with that, and he wants to compete for titles. Well, number one, you got to win the regular season games to be able to compete for titles.
Sure.
You got to pile those up. And then when you get to the playoffs, then you have to win, of course. And they've only won one game. Okay, well, let's look at this last year. Why did they lose their playoff game? What was the number one problem in that game?
There are so many problems. What was
a
the
total
number one
inability
problem?
To throw the freaking football, like the whole entire second half of the season. Now, if you say Russ really liked Shoddy, and that was the problem, is that he believed in Shoddy to right the ship, then how come he didn't right the ship? So then that suggests that Shoddy was suggesting the right things to do, right, and had the right adjustments. But then Russ just had an inability to produce the results.
Execute.
So if he's mad about winning in the playoffs, that one playoff win in that time frame was done despite your shaky performance against the Eagles. It's not like the offense lit it up against a terrible Eagles team.
Yeah.
And then you go to Dallas. What was it, the year before that? Or was it 2 years before that?
Dallas was the year before. Because 2017, they missed. 2018, they lost to Dallas. 2019 was the win over the Eagles. And then 2020, losing to the Rams.
And the offense was shaky against Dallas. And you go, oh, well, this is all Pete's fault. Well, if you're the leader of the offense, at some point, don't you take some accountability here? He hasn't played great in these moments over the last 3-4 years. And it's not all a function of scheme and offensive line.
I think over the last 4 years, though, you could probably point to offensive line as being the common thread of not being good enough in any of those playoff games.
Did it seem like this year was an offensive line problem?
Oh, at the end of the season, yes. Problem? At the end of the season, the offensive line was a problem. Because Mike Iupati was done. Brandon Schell was injured. Ethan Posick wasn't all that great. So you had your Pro Bowl left tackle and you had your rookie right guard. At the end of the season, that just wasn't good enough.
Yeah. So basically injuries and attrition throughout the season.
Yeah.
Good luck running an NFL franchise and not have dudes get hurt.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think, but also signing a left guard that's, you know, in his mid-30s and not thinking that he's going to get injured and have the kind of dudes who can fill in behind him,
That they shouldn't do better on the offensive line. They should, and it has been a problem. But it's just, it's all the finger pointing without any accountability.
Yeah.
It's like, well, Russ, the defense has been good enough for you to win more games in the playoffs. And if you're as great as you say you are, then you should be able to overcome this, right?
I think you can overcome it to an extent. But again, we go back to the Super Bowl and Patrick Mahomes could not overcome it in the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I think I've identified this. It all comes back to the offensive line.
I think it's been part of the issue. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. It's the idea that there's all blame goes over here or all blame goes over there.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, it's all the offensive line. Russ is a saint and it's been fine. Well, or, it's all Russ and he's struggled down the stretch and, they've totally done enough on the offensive line and the rest of the team.
Yeah.
So can't both these things be true at the same time?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess that's all I'm trying to really get at the end of the day.
All right. One last one here from John in Louisville, Kentucky says, hi, Brandon and Adam. I just wanted to give my 2 cents about what I think Russell Wilson is up to and why. Russell Wilson's moves make sense to this point if it is a pressure for at least one, if not two, top flight offensive linemen for the coming year. Whether it be through draft or free agency, no one will give the value of a tweet about how anyone's PR looked in late February or early March if the team is winning games in the playoffs this coming year. He has covered up bad lines with his mobility for years, and he can see that his years of doing that on the regular and not getting killed are just about done. All he has to do is look over at Dwayne Brown and think, I need some more of that level of play somewhere on this line, and I need it before he is gone. Then he watches Tom Brady with a good offensive line and the tools he asked for run through the Chiefs on his way to yet another Super Bowl, while Patrick Mahomes runs for his life in a fashion that probably seemed very familiar. Add in the impending retirement of Drew Brees, only having gotten one Super Bowl, and it is easy to see how he would think. I know what I need, and I need to use my influence in the media to make them go get it now. Otherwise, Pete and John may go down some other road as the main focus for the money and draft capital again this year. Plus, if you can't talk trash when you are the Walter Payton Man of the Year, when can you? Keep up the great work from John.
I actually agree with John in a lot of ways in that. And I think the biggest one is the idea that Russell Wilson has covered up for some of the failings of the offensive line with his mobility. And I think this was the season where we all saw, ooh, can't quite do that anymore the way that he used to. Not that he's not mobile anymore or still a great athlete and all that, but can you also blame Pete and John for using that ability to cover up for the sins of the offensive line so they could spend resources in other places and to try to win a championship? Because that's what the philosophy was.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. They still did try on the offensive line. It's just, it wasn't successful in a lot of regards. So, yeah, it's so I guess there is some blame to be placed. But, yeah, I see blame in all kinds of places. So I think what John's saying there makes sense. And I think that's why I put that one last, because I thought that was a good place to close out the conversation.
Sure. And as far as when is a good time to talk trash? Well, there's two things that people can probably guess that I can't really stand. And, one of them is whining. I can't deal with whining, and this feels a little whiny to me. Not only that, but to do it kind of backhanded, like through all these, you know, anonymous sources, and his camp or his team is leaking this out here and there. Like, be a man, put your face on it, say it to the world. Like, yeah. I just, that bothers me a huge amount. And then secondly, I can't stand drama. And this has brought a lot of drama to this offseason that, frankly, was completely unnecessary. I think that Pete and John watched this last season as well and could see, yes, Russ can't quite move like he used to. We're going to have to do a little bit more on the offensive line. It's as obvious as the day is long. What's to say that they wouldn't have done the right thing here over this offseason without Russ going through this public drama?
It does lead me to that idea that he thinks that there may be some faith that's been lost between him and Pete and John doing the right thing.
This is a lot of both sides just taking each other for granted. It's like getting divorced over the dishes never being done. And everything else is pretty damn good.
Things are good. Things are good in Seattle. Things are really good in the flock. Adam, we have some new members of the flock to welcome. They're not married to the show, but they're, you know, some of these people are at least under contract for the next year.
All right.
Starting off with Tim from Ole, coming in via PayPal. $145.44, $12.12 a month for the year. Tim says, I've been a grifting freeloader for over 2 years now. Thought it was high time to cleanse my Hawkra with $145.44, $12.12 per month paid up front. Thanks for keeping me sane through the offseason. Question, why isn't everyone more excited about the Alex Collins re-signing? Seems like a solid number three, maybe number two running back. Great for the Ravens until injury. From Tim.
Hey, welcome to the flock, Tim, and your Hawkra has now been officially cleansed. I hope that feels good. Yeah. The Alex Collins signing. I think, he probably could be a good number two. I bet you they end up drafting a guy, and I think they're going to be looking to Penny to be the lead back this year. I mean, that's the reason you spend that kind of draft capital on a guy like that. It's time for him to put up or shut up.
There's two guys that I really feel that you have to give significant time to this next year based on their draft status to really see if you really prove that you made good decisions. And that's one, Rashad Penny as a lead back, and two, Marquise Blair getting significant time as a defensive back.
Well, and Blair would have had that this year had he not been injured.
I think so. I feel like that's true.
Honestly, I believe in Blair. I think that's going to turn out to be a good move for the Seahawks going forward. I'm really looking forward to him next year. But everybody knows how I feel about Penny. But they're not going to pay Carson what he's going to fetch on the open market, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I can trust Carson just health-wise, you know? And that's no fault of his own. It's just part of the deal. And yeah, you draft Penny with a first rounder. This is why.
LJ Collier in that mix too. I was listening to him on Seahawks Man to Man, and dude sounds fired up for this next year. I like LJ Collier's attitude.
And you know what? He came in and he made a few plays. Maybe it takes him. Maybe he's a slow starter, you know?
Well, that's what he was kind of getting at, in that his first offseason, you know, they didn't really have an offseason program. Then he got injured, and then so it was just kind of fighting back that whole first season. Then this last season, they didn't have an offseason program, and now he comes in, and he does do, you know, he had a good year this year. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, but he was saying how, you know, he's left some plays out on the field, and once he gets that squared away, he thinks he can be, you know, a really valuable asset to the Seahawks.
Hey, I'm all for it, man. I'm rooting for it. No doubt about it.
Jeffrey coming in at $60. That's $5 a month for the yearly donation via Patreon, gettingtheflock.com. And Scott Larson coming in at $60 as well for the year. So welcome to the flock, just Jeffrey and Scott.
Yeah, welcome, fellas. And it's interesting to see a push towards the annual donation. That's fun.
Well, I did offer the little bit of incentive to people who wanted to do yearly. You know, I would upgrade to stickers if they came in at the $1 mm-hmm. a month for the whole year. For people who, because normally you get stickers at the $3 a month level, All right. And then so if you go in at $3 for the whole year, I'll send you a patch. $5 for the whole year. So at that $60 level, I'll send the stainless steel cups. I'm drinking out of my Seahawkers podcast stainless steel mug right now. So it's maybe just that little bit of extra incentive. Now, I did see Paul King came in and he came in at the annual 48 pounds. He shifted over from PayPal and he says, "Catfish to me for not getting in the flock properly. I've been half-assing it with the monthly PayPal payments instead of getting in the Patreon flock. So now I'm here with the annual payment and in penance upped my donation to the next tier as a thank you to you guys for continuing to put out the best Seahawks, nay, the best football podcast out there. Adam's rants are superior to all rants, including Brandon. There is no equal, and we love it. A Seahawks game in Germany would be sweet, as I've never been to a Hawks game or to Germany, and I think the atmosphere in Berlin would beat London. Plus beers in the beer keller with some little flockers pre-post game would be awesome. Keep up the great work.
Catfish!
The Niners.
Catfish!
The Cards. And most of all,
catfish!
The Lambs. But more than anything, go Hawks. Yes, I always have to say go Hawks at the end of the pod in fear of bad Hawkra.
Go Hawks. Yeah, no, that's a fantastic email. A big shot at London, you know, that Berlin would best London in atmosphere.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying shots fired.
Right. And that's from someone in the UK. So there you go.
Yeah. But no, I appreciate it, man.
But the point I was going to make, though, is that there's no wrong way of getting in the flock, Paul. You know, if you support the show in any way, you're part of it. So now, though, you're getting email notifications when we post the show, because that's one of the benefits of going through gettingtheflock.com, the Patreon route. And we've also been posting the uncatfished episodes. And, you know, Paul dropped all kinds of catfishes in that email and he wrote it out. So if you're hearing the catfishes in the uncatfished show, that's just because I gave Steve Rabel the opportunity to say the word catfish instead of reading it myself.
Which I think is a benefit to everybody, right?
Yeah, I don't need to
read
it.
It's a public service, really. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, you doing it that way. I will say, maybe another incentive here, Brandon, is if we could get 2,000 of you to be little flockers in total for the year, I think maybe that gets you to two shows a week.
2,000. We're at 300 right now.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. I think I could come close to not grinding wheels.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something to think about.
And that's, compared to the amount of people that listen, I mean, that's a small percentage.
If everybody got in at the $1 annual option, so 12 bucks for the year, we could get
there. Two shows a year.
Two shows a year. Two shows a week. Or two shows during a year. The season.
Two shows a week. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Now, if we could get it to two shows a year and have 2,000 people donating,
now we're really winning.
Then, yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, I think both of us still want to do more than two a year.
That's true.
Yeah.
Mark Antrobus comes in at the 30-pound level, says, "Hi, guys. I've been freeloading for about a year, so decided it was time to officially join the flock. The shows are great. You guys are great companions when I'm out walking my dog. Keep up the great work and go Hawks."
Nice. Go Hawks. And, yeah, it is kind of fun to know when and where people listen to the show.
Yeah.
Because everybody does it a little different.
Out walking the dog. Yeah.
Out walking the dog. Like, oh, I didn't know I went on dog walks, but I do.
You do. Yeah. You mow the lawn. You do dog walks.
Yeah. I do all sorts of things I didn't know I do.
Commute in the big city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Welcome to the flock to Mark. And James comes in. He also shifted over to PayPal and came in at the $36 annual donation. You guys are making me work. I have all kinds of work to send out and mail things off now.
Hey, I thought you may have found an intern, though, to help with that.
Yeah, my mom.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get Glenda on it.
Yeah. She's unemployed now, so she can pick up the slack.
There we go. Perfect.
Oh, she's also retirement age, so being unemployed at that time period, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, you should be a little unemployed. Be able to enjoy things a little bit. Just chill. Yeah, I think she's earned it.
Welcome to the flock to Luke Gilmore in at the $12, the annual level. And so I'll be sending out some stickers to Luke.
I appreciate it, Luke.
And Leo comes in. He moved from the 12-12 to 138.10 euros. Says, membership updated. Thanks for all the content. And keep on pounding the Puna.
Hey, that's what we're here for, Leo. You know it.
Kevin Russell, he upped his donation to the annual level, 114 for the year. Says, guys, lying in a COVID ward here in Leicester and listening to episode 326 cheered me up and inspired me to change from monthly to annual. I can now look forward to a summer of a stainless steel beer cup and putting this behind me. As always, sterling job from you both, and great to see the flow of Little Flockers continuing in the postseason. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks, man, and heal up. That doesn't sound fun if you have to actually be in the hospital for the vid.
I wonder if they do it differently, though, if it's in a ward in terms of like people that are just a little bit sick, or
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how it works either.
My guess is if it's healthcare overseas, probably better than the way we do it.
They probably, yeah.
It's just what most of the metrics point to. I don't know. I'm no expert, though, so.
Joshua Dawes in at 145.44 for the year. So thanks for pledging annually, Joshua.
Heck yeah, man.
Emilio also switched to yearly, went from $6 to $80.96. And Emilio says, switched to yearly and updated the amount to pay respect to some Hall of Famers, 80 and 96. Also, I just wanted to say, I don't get why everyone is freaking out about this offseason. I hopped in Madden to see what could be done. I was able to, one, re-sign Carson at a team-friendly discount of $6 million for 6 years, trade for Derwin James, Isaiah Simmons, Quentin Nelson, and Zach Martin, sign Cam Robinson and Daryl Williams, draft the top two pass rushers, and trade for the top receiver of the fake Madden draft class. Secure 4 first-round draft picks for the 2023 draft. It's that easy. Schneider needs to get these things done this offseason or hire me for their front office as soon as possible. Madden is totally a realistic NFL simulation, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I guess I got mad about people saying that Schneider hadn't been performing as a top 5 GM in the league, but
Emilio,
I mean, geez, Louis, if the Little Flockers can do this, yes, please. Yeah, let's sign me up.
Fire. See, now the mantra of the offseason needs to be fire John Schneider, hire Emilio.
There we go.
He knows what he's doing.
Exactly. Yeah, clearly.
And to close it off, we got a few more people giving raises to the annual. Peter Brooks raised up to $60 for the annual donation. Henrik Will to 60 euros. John Anderson, 48 pounds. Ray Ingraham to $36 annual donation. And Mark Burrell, 30 pounds. So thanks to all of you for going from monthly to annually. And yeah, it does help in one sense. If it helps you with your budget, that's great. And you want the extra things sent your way, I'm happy to do that. I'm also happy with people just continuing to do monthly, though, too. It works out really the monthly to yearly, to where it really helps is if you're at the $1 level. If you can switch that to yearly, that helps the most. But yeah, if you're doing $3 a month, $5 a month, $12 a month, and you're happy to keep going that way too, we are absolutely thankful to all of you who are supporting the show, no matter which way you're doing it.
Oh, without question, man. It's always a little mind-blowing that there are people out there that would find us entertaining enough to give us a couple bucks for it. So yeah, it's more than appreciated. However the heck you become a non-freeloader. Now, all you freeloaders out there, and you know who you are, I hope the guilt is just, I don't know, like paralyzing. I hope every morning when you wake up, it should haunt you in your daily waking hours and in your sleep. So good luck with that.
Especially if you find, you know, true value out of the show and you can afford to return that value.
Yeah. And even if you don't, like, you know, you should donate anyways. So... Yeah.
And you can go to adamspodcasthoboshack.com to donate as well.
Absolutely. There we go. I think I've decided that I'm going to build like a mini shop, back behind the cabin here. Mm-hmm. So I have a place, like a workplace, but then like wall off a corner of it and turn that into the podcast studio. So I can kill two birds with one stone.
You can have a workshop and a hobo shack. Two
yes,
in one.
A hobo pod chat.
Adam's Podcast.
Hobo Shack?
Adam's Podcast, HoboShack.com.
There we go. Yeah.
The PHS.
The PHS. I need me some more PHS.
All right, Adam. Well, one email before we get into Do Better and Better at Life. We got a lot more feedback, and gosh, I still had some emails from our mailbag segment that we did a while back. So I may have to hold on to those. It's probably going to be a busy month now with free agency. So I'll hold on to them. We can get to them later or find a way to work them in, and just appreciate all of the feedback that's come in, because it's sometimes it's getting to the point to where we have to, you know, to try and fit within a 2-hour show to cut some of the stuff out. And I just really appreciate those of you sending it in. There was one though that I have to respond to, and this may have even come in through a direct message and said, "Hey, I really need to give some feedback about the Seahawkers podcast. Adam needs to immediately stop to say true fact. It's bullshit. Catfish! Imagine someone saying to you, warm heat, wet water, or true fact. Also, to be a real smartass, that's a tautology." And he and Jay defines it there. But I have a response, and you may want to respond to this too, Adam. But first and foremost, okay. Jay, first and foremost is that not only is it a tautology, it's needless repetition. And I'm sure Adam is consciously aware of it. Jay, we are giving away free content. We're not asking you to prepay in advance for the show. You don't need a PIN number. So you either need to accept Adam's true facts as part of this show, or you don't. Either you accept Adam as the world's greatest Seahawks podcaster in the world.
No, or, that's you, Brandon. We know that.
Or you take a hike all the way up to the summit at the top of the mountain.
Well, I think this irked you a bit more than it did me. I think that's a true fact. Look, it's something I say. It's probably not going to change. It's a little like Chris Sims, the way that he does that a lot in his podcast. It ain't changing. Like, he smacks his lips or does a little like clicking of the tongue.
Oh yeah,
all the time. Yeah, so I don't know. True fact isn't going to change, but I will say that he does have some support in this matter. And my daughter vehemently agrees with Jay here.
She doesn't like you saying true fact.
Yeah, she thinks it's stupid. And that's fine. Look,
I thought it was part of your charm. I wasn't going to get you to stop, tell you to stop doing it.
Well, and I thought it was
intentional. Are you telling me that this is not even intentional?
No, it's just something I say.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because there's false facts out there. I mean, right now it feels like half this world operates on false facts and half the world operates on true facts. But I mean, whatever. And if it's a Tataism or whatever he called it, like, then fine.
I like Tataism. I don't really care.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, this kind of goes back to earlier in the podcast. Probably not going to change for public pressure. So
there you go, Jay.
Yeah, but I appreciate it. People can call in and write in and criticize whenever they want.
Yeah, you can call in too. 253-235-9041.
Don't get me wrong. I wake up every day and know that I am also a freaking idiot. Like, I know that. That's a true fact too. So, like, there's not much you can say to hurt my feelings.
On to Do Better and Better at Life.
All right, man. My do better this week is a little bit of a personal nature. My do better is for the lovely Brittany, you know, the lady friend.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, she needs a little do better. She knows she needs a little do better, too. So Brittany has developed what has now become a bit of a history with acid. And not like the drug. Like actual dissolved things acid.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah, the opposite of a base, right?
Okay.
So,
this is so chemistry issues. You're getting into chemistry issues with your significant other on the podcast.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. This is getting deep. And like I said, it's a bit of a personal nature. So, maybe 6 or 7 months ago, I was out on a road trip for work and I get a frantic phone call. Well, the first one wasn't frantic. I get a phone call and we're talking. And she's like, "Oh, don't be mad, but I had taken a battery from the cabin back to the Missoula house to charge it, and it tipped over and it tore the seat in the back of the Patriot. And my first question was, wait, what? There's a battery that tipped over in the back of the Jeep? And she's like, yeah. I was like, is it still there? And she's like, yeah. I was like, immediately get off the phone and go and turn the battery right side up and get as much baking soda as a human being can find and start pouring it everywhere, all over the back seat. Because she had been careless with where she had placed the battery, did not secure the battery, and allowed it to tip over and sit overnight and leak battery acid all over the back seat of the Patriot.
Oh, no.
And basically dissolve the freaking back seat. It wasn't torn. It had disintegrated, right? And all I can think about as I'm hundreds of miles away is the frame of the car underneath the seat just dissolving into nothingness. So... In a panic, she went out, she put the baking soda on it. She went to like the local O'Reilly's and like somehow got the dude at the desk to come out and help her take the seat out. Fortunately, it only destroyed the seat and it did not actually get into the, you know, metal of the car.
Okay.
So that was 6-7 months ago. So this last week, I'm out on another trip out in Washington, and I get a frantic phone call, and she's like, oh my God, I don't know what's happening, but all the pipes in the cabin kitchen sink, they're all dissolving. There's acid everywhere. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, wait, what? Why is there acid everywhere in the cabin right now? So just a little backstory. 2 weeks before, the little drain field I had made for just the gray water out of the sink had backed up.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's interesting. But it's also been like negative 20 degrees for like a week.
Yeah, the ground might
maybe
be frozen.
I didn't dig it deep enough and it, you know, it's freezing up and not draining correctly. Or there's been too much food that's gone down there over the last 3 years and maybe it's a little plugged up.
Oh, yeah.
So I went down to the store and I bought some pretty heavy duty drain cleaner that is sulfuric acid, you know, mainly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, read the directions. You don't mix it in standing water. You know, da-da-da. I tried and I poured a little of that, right, you know, down the pipes to see if that would free the blockage, and it didn't. So, you know, I waited a day, so, and it would slowly drain out. So it all kind of cleared out. I started boiling some water, pouring some hot tea kettles down the, of water down the pipes. While she's there, by the way, watching me do this. And I'm like, oh, look at that. Problem solved. It was just frozen. Oh. We just needed to pour a bunch of hot water down here. We're right as rain again. So apparently the drain field had frozen again while I was gone on a trip. And instead of pouring a bunch of hot water down the drain, which solved the problem last time, Brittany took the jug of acid and poured it into the standing water, which had a chemical reaction that obliterated the pipes, leaked all over the floor, all over the stuff that was under the sink, and tried to melt the cabin with acid while I was gone. So now she's destroyed a car seat and the kitchen with acid. She's banned from acid. No more acid from in Brittany's life. Brittany, do better.
You are the base to Brittany's acid.
And not only that, but how does this always happen while I'm gone?
You
like
know
I leave and she destroys something.
You know, it's funny. Every time that you and I will go to Seahawks games is when one of our smoke detector batteries will die out.
Yes. Yeah, somehow.
I don't know how or why it works that way, but I always get a call when you and I are at a football game.
Yes.
In the middle of the night that, it's beeping again, keeping us awake.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was an interesting couple days. And, of course, it was the first day of my week-long trip that I was gone.
Ooh,
that
ouch.
I get this phone call. And I came back to the cabin to a genuine disaster.
Oh,
I get to rebuild everything in the kitchen and make a whole new drain field. And so it's going to be fun. It's
going to be fun week.
It's good times.
Adam's podcast, hoboshack.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
Adam may need it after dropping a do better on his significant other to just for a place to stay.
Oh, she knows. She knows.
My do better this week is for Michael Pittman of the Colts. Also some chemistry issues, except now in Indianapolis, because Carson Wentz was recently traded to the Colts. He's worn number 11 going back to his days at North Dakota State. Now, Adam, number 11, it's not my favorite quarterback number, but it's a fine quarterback number.
Mm-hmm.
There's one problem, though, that when Carson Wentz was traded to the Colts, is that Michael Pittman, who was drafted by the Colts last year, he picked number 11, which isn't even a good wide receiver number, but that's the number.
I know how
picked.
You feel about those things. Yes.
And it's an abomination now that he has said that he will not give up number 11 to his quarterback, Carson Wentz. Now, I don't care what the chemistry issues are in Indianapolis, if that's good or you know, how the Colts are going to fare next year. That's Frank Reich's problem to work out. But I need to put this on record for all of the fantasy football fans that listen to this show. Do not draft Michael Pittman in your fantasy draft this year. Carson Wentz is going to hold it against him that he's not giving him his number, which, like I said, isn't even a real wide receiver number. For one, Michael Pittman, pick a number in the 80s. Two, let your quarterback take number 11. And then you put yourself in a position to have a Pro Bowl season and a Hall of Fame career. Michael Pittman, do better.
Yeah, this feels a little short-sighted, doesn't it? If you're Michael Pittman.
Yeah, you want your quarterback to be happy.
Yeah, like he's the guy who gets you the ball
and gets you paid.
Uh-huh.
Or yeah. Cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't fight with a quarterback if you're a wide receiver over your number.
No.
Seems like rule
no,
one.
No, you don't do that. It's detrimental for your career. I can just see Carson going through his reads. Okay, T.Y. Hilton, like down there. Oh, there's 11. Yep. Check it down.
Not a good move by Pittman.
No, I could see myself if I was Carson Wentz being petty about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I can see Carson Wentz himself just being petty about that if everything you read is true. As you know, it is.
Oh, it's got to be. It's in the media. It's true.
It's true.
Well, I'm going to move right into my better at life this week. And you know what? My better at life is for O.J. Simpson. And for those of you who only know O.J. Simpson as a Twitter celebrity today, yeah, they might not understand, Adam, that back in the day, OJ was a killer running back. Like his ability to slash. Well, let's just say that he's guilty of being a really talented running back when he played for the Bills. If you don't know OJ's history, you probably know him at least for the advice that he routinely offers via Twitter. And he had some this past week, Adam, for the Seahawks.
I guess I missed out on this whole Russell Wilson thing. Look, Seattle. Russell's associated with Seattle, and I know in his heart he don't want to leave Seattle. If he does leave, it would be to an American League team. I don't see them trading him to a National League team, so that means the Raiders would be in play. That's good. I live in Vegas. But come on, guys. You haven't learned anything from Indianapolis? Look, Indy wouldn't get Andrew Luck an offensive line. For years, they didn't draft him or go get offensive linemen, and you saw what happened to Andrew Luck, and he's 1 year younger than Russell Wilson, and he's out of the game. So come on, Seattle. Get the man some offensive linemen. I'm just saying. Take care.
OJ's correct. So to OJ Simpson for offering some sound advice on how the Seattle Seahawks can keep Russell Wilson from getting killed behind his offensive line, OJ Simpson, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Hey, I don't know if I can get on board with OJ being better at life on anything.
I thought I dropped enough hints about how I feel about OJ just within that diatribe there.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm definitely not in the camp of somebody did something 15 years ago or said something and they should be canceled today, right? Because times change, people change, all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Except for where it comes to stabby things.
I know there's a low bar for better at life than Skip Bayless. And OJ may be below that bar.
He is below that bar.
Okay, so maybe the better at life isn't OJ Simpson himself, but OJ Simpson's killer commentary on the Russell Wilson situation.
And moving on. You know, you've had some good dad jokes throughout the history of the show. That was not one of them, but I did enjoy it.
Who you got? Let's close this out.
Okay. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for Aaron Levine, the reporter from
Q13.
Yeah, exactly. Because he has done an awesome job throughout all of this Russ drama of being a very level-headed, smart person about all this. And basically, his whole take is this. This is stupid. Knock it off and get it figured out. And I'm 100% on board. And he actually makes fun of some of the other like reports and stuff out there. Like he made some joke about Chicago wanting to trade for Russ and being like, oh, maybe for a deep dish pizza. Like I love it. I love that he is in a semi-official capacity with the team and has a big voice and a big following. And it's just pointing out the absurdity of all of this. Aaron Levine, for being the voice of reason, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I like it. I put Greg Bell in that category, too. Greg Bell from Tacoma News Tribune. He's been in the similar camp.
And, hey, there's been other guys that made really killer jokes about the Russell Wilson to Chicago thing. And, you know, one of them might be named Brandon Schultz.
That's right. And if you are in the flock as a member of our Ring of Honor Facebook group, hopefully you saw that.
Absolutely. It was better. It was better for your deal.
Better than my OJ Simpson joke.
Yes. Markedly better. Markedly better.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.